Sad news in the world of Washington football with the passing of legendary, truly legendary general manager Bobby Bethard. We're going to reflect on that. It's also 1 year of Commanders football, 2-2-22. Now it is 2-2-23. We're going to look back at the first year of the Commanders, plus a little bit of OC news. Let's have a podcast.
On the football field, the action happens in the blink of an eye. It's like that off the field, too, when you've been injured. In a split second, your life is changed. Whether on the field or in the courtroom, when you've been injured, you need the right teammates by your side. You need Chase and Boscolo, a law firm willing to protect and fight for your rights. On the football field or in the courtroom, having the right team determines whether you win or lose. When injuries change your life, call Chase and Boscolo, trial lawyers that care.
What up, everybody? It's JP Finley. It's the Washington Football Talk podcast brought to you by Oarsman Automotive of Virginia. We ride with them, want you to do the same thing. Check them out, oarsmanva.com. Seven locations all over Northern Virginia, Alexandria to Chantilly, Fords, Dodge, Toyota, whatever you want, man. They got it. Joined by Mitch Tischler, Pete Haley, as always. Let's start with the sad news that legendary general manager Bobby Bethard passed away. Pete, that probably has zero recollection. I remember little. Big man's probably somewhere in between. Bethard was the GM from 78 to 88, drafted three Hall of Famers, Art Monk, Darrell Green, Russ Grimm, hired Joe Gibbs, basically. They're both Southern California guys. When you talk about the legendary GMs in this sport, he's up there. He was part of the Dolphins' two Super Bowl runs in the 70s. He got to, I think, like, Pete, young people don't understand the how impossible it was for the then San Diego Chargers to get to a Super Bowl. The Chargers were great with Dan Fouts and Kellen Winslow. Great, never could get to the Super Bowl. He got the Chargers to a Super Bowl with Stan Humphries as the quarterback. And I'm not trying to take anything away from Bobby Ross, who was the coach, but, like, that's that. I think he drafted Junior Seau. I mean, his lifespan in football is so significant and so wide. And in Washington, he's the best personnel evaluator the city's ever had. And Casserly deserves credit for the last Super Bowl, the 91 team. But Casserly was Bethard's number two. And if you look at the strengths of that 91 team, a lot of it was the O-line that he built and just a lot of defensive players, Charles Mann, all sorts of things. So, and what's cool, his grandson is in the NFL. I think he's on the Jags now. CJ Bethard played at Iowa. Heartfelt condolences to the family. He was fighting Alzheimer's. I talked to some folks that said he really wasn't doing well the last few years. And you hope the family finds some peace and that Bobby's, watching Oklahoma drills in the sky.
Well said, JP. Yeah, I mean, certainly don't know as much about him, but when these things happen, you try to educate yourself. And seeing, the 1981 draft that Al Galdi tweeted about with Mark May, Russ Grimm, Dexter Manley, scooping up a guy named Joe Jacoby as an undrafted free agent, that's a pretty nice find. And hearing just the stories that you've talked about, that Kime tweets about, like the people who are a little more knowledgeable of Bobby Bethard, it's really cool. And when you hear about those teams, Joe Gibbs, you realize there is a Joe Gibbs-like person in the front office, and having those two together, working together, no wonder the Washington was one of the best teams in the NFL for 15, 20 years. So really, really sad day, but, like you said, he lived a full life, a good life, touched a lot of people here in the Washington area, and I hope him and his family are in a better spot now that this Alzheimer's battle is over.
Yeah, he was obviously a little bit before kind of all of our time. We were six, seven, eight when he was putting together those Super Bowl teams. But, over the years, just being around the Commanders, you got to see him on some of those alumni days from time to time. I think, have we mentioned he's a Pro Football Hall of Famer? I mean, there aren't that many people that come through Washington that end up in the Hall of Fame over there. We talked about, all those draft picks, Dexter Manley, Darrell Green, Charles Mann, Gary Clark. I mean, the list of folks that are in the Ring of Honor around FedEx Field, so many of them come from his days as the GM, and it's a sad day to see him pass. And obviously, he was an incredible football mind.
Also, apparently, per Wikipedia, not just a winner in football, From 2005 to 2009, Beathard was a consecutive five-time first-place winner in the men's age 65 and over group at the World Body Surfing Champions in Oceanside, California. What a baller. The guy does everything.
That's awesome.
You have something to aspire to, Pete, 40 years from now.
I would argue I'm the best body surfer on the podcast. I'm kind of nasty.
I'll let you have it.
I have a
yeah, you can have that. Congratulations.
So he went into the Hall of Fame, and so everybody knows this. They make the Hall of Fame announcement Super Bowl week. It's usually, I think, Saturday night of Super Bowl Sunday. Maybe it's Friday.
Yeah.
It's one or the other. And I was working that Super Bowl. Excuse me. I want to say it was Minnesota. I think it was Minnesota. So 2018. It was when they traded for Alex and Kirk eventually left. And
yeah.
All that.
2018.
And that Hall of Fame class was stacked. I remember it was Randy Moss, Urlacher, Brian Dawkins. I'm forgetting somebody else that was like a major name. But so the way they do it is there's a press conference and all the guys are in the room, their family's in the room, and Beathard goes in that year. And Bobby's health was like kind of failing at that point, and he wasn't there. But, you know, Moss is answering questions, Urlacher's answering questions. And then maybe you can Google his name. The big dude, the big jack dude that used to run the Hall of Fame, always wore the crazy suits. He has since, I think, retired from the Hall of Fame. But that dude is like, hey, you know, we got Bobby Beathard on the phone. If anybody wants to ask him a question. So it was just like a speakerphone kind of PA setup in the room.
David Baker.
Thank you. Big dude. See if you get his.
He looks Mitch. He makes Mitch look like a wide receiver. Yeah.
Oh, so towers over me.
Yo, he's a big fella. And I'm pointing that out for a reason. So, you know, everybody's answering questions. And then Baker's like, yeah, we got Bobby Beathard on the phone. And let's be honest, by 2018, Bobby Beathard hadn't been involved in the NFL probably 25 years or something. I don't know when that Chargers team, when he stopped with the Chargers, I want to say it was like 97 or something. He was body surfing at that point. So, you know, nobody really had questions, and I was kind of the only DC guy there. And so I was like, hey, Bobby, you know, JB Finley, NBC Sports in DC, how does this recognition feel for a team that was dominant but maybe doesn't have as many people in the Hall of Fame as it deserves? And that question got David Baker looking at me pretty sideways. And Bobby answered it very politely, and he was a true like gentleman in that he just wanted to give everyone else credit and not take any for himself. And then I asked a follow up because it was also the same day Joe Jacoby did not get into the Hall of Fame. Huh. And it was the last day I believe he was eligible before the senior process. And then I said, okay, Bobby, how does it feel that Jacoby didn't get in? And at this point, David Baker looks like he's about to rip my limbs off one by one and beat me to death with them. He's staring bullets at me. And Bobby the answer kind of validated the question, I feel like. And Bobby's like, Joe's not in? That's a joke. So I felt pretty good about asking it, especially for the new Hall of Famer to question why the heck Jacoby wasn't in. But that was my only kind of, I guess, I was in the same room as him a couple of times, but like official interaction with Beathard, and it's something I'll always remember anyway.
Yeah. For those listening, JP looks to have all four limbs still intact. But yeah, that's one of the cool parts of our job and your job, JP, is that you get to overlap with these guys. You always talk about how great it is to interview Gibbs, and now you got a Bobby Beathard story. And the more you do it, the more of these legends you run into. And that's a damn good one. I'm glad David Baker stayed the hell away from you.
I guess any Hall of Fame class is going to be impressive. Oh, 2018 class. Urlacher, Terrell Owens, yeah. Randy Moss, Brian Dawkins, Bobby Beathard, and then two old guys, Robert Brazil and Jerry Kramer. Pretty decent class over there.
Yeah, dude. So I forgot Ray Lewis, because Ray Lewis was there next to Randy Moss. T.O. didn't come. T.O. didn't come, but he also didn't do the speakerphone bit that Beathard did. So the one dude, though, I think it was Jerry Kramer. I think it was Jerry Kramer.
Had to be 85.
But I think he played for like the Oilers, like way back.
He played for the Packers. There was a dude, Robert Brazil, who played for the Oilers.
Okay, that dude, Robert, had this Texas-sized belt buckle and, like, his whole family there. Good for him, man. So,
dude, speaking of Ray Lewis, that might have been the best part of the season was Pete in the preseason against the Ravens trying to do the squirrel dance on TV with us.
Thank you.
I think that probably was not the best part of the season. Yeah,
there was hundreds of better parts, but it was a nice.
I was dripping with sarcasm. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
I'll take the locker room after the Eagles game. You can have Pete's squirrel dance.
All right, and you can have the body surfing.
So I want to talk. We're doing our superlatives. It's 2-2-23. We're having a whole party. Get the keg. But before we do it, I want to talk Anthony Lynn. Commanders officially interviewed Anthony Lynn yesterday. For all the consternation about Ron Rivera playing golf, he left Pebble Beach, drove to Santa Clara, interviewed Lynn in person. I think this one has real legs. I think this could happen. I would put him, I suppose they're still going to wait on Bieniemy. I still think Shurmur, it could really happen. But I think Lynn, this is a guy that's run his own team. He's run offenses, just did a year with Kyle, loves running the football. He's one of the few OCs head coaches that came from the running back side of things rather than the quarterback side of things. If they have a plan that they want to run the hell out of the football, like this – dude makes sense. And if you look at his offenses when he was running things in, I guess it was LA then, but the Chargers anyway. If you look at just the 4 years he was running the Chargers, they finished in yards 4th, 11th, 10th, and 9th. Now, did it help you have probably Phil Rivers and then Justin Herbert? Sure. And the point totals weren't as high as the yardage. So you wonder if they got bogged down in the red zone, which Lord knows we've seen plenty of. But this one, to me, could make a lot of sense. And I think of the names we've heard that aren't Bieniemy, of the people that have interviewed, and that list is Zampezi, Shurmur, London, Studsville, and now Lynn. I believe that's the five that have officially interviewed. I would put him at the top of the list of who I'd want.
Yeah, I mean – Anthony Lynn's your guy that if you want to go in and run the football. I mean, he was the running backs coach under Greg Roman in Buffalo. You talked about how good they were, that they led the NFL in rushing in that season. I mean, he's a guy who's going to come in and give you 3 yards and a cloud of dust. And if that's truly what Ron Rivera and Martin Mayhew want, then, you know, I guess we're going to have a lot of fun football to watch next year on the field.
Ooh, Mitch with a tepid endorsement.
Yep. I don't think
I think the whole idea of running the football as if they pound the ball as much as Ron and Martin talked about, that's boring football, and it's not
plausible. Like it's not going to season.
Not it's not a that. Service academy. We're in the NFL, and while it might be boring,
what the hell?
What's going on? Are you playing something on your computer?
JP just started.
I don't know where this is coming from. I'm going to let you down. All right, hang on. Hello?
We got you, bud.
What the hell was that?
Just start muting tabs. That's what you got to do.
Well, he's got 39 of them, I think.
Yeah, I got a lot of tabs, dude. I don't know. Sorry. That song's kind of a banger, though. Go ahead.
Mitch, it's impossible that they run the ball that much. No one can in the NFL. This is an Army. This isn't a high school team in Montana. They're going to lead with the running game. So – and your new phrase is 3 yards and a cloud of dust. I'm going to make you a shirt so you can wear it in addition to I'm a bear and I want beer. But
question, yeah. Quick question.
Yeah.
You think that's a new phrase, Pete?
Well, no, that's Mitch's right. Pet phrase. Mitch's new pet phrase.
Did you say pret phrase?
I did. Have a great broad breath. Okay. Anthony Lynn.
We're killing it at 9:30 a.m. on Tuesday.
I think Anthony Lynn would be a good solid hire because – my two requirements, does he have a track record and is he outside of the franchise? Both checked. Do we think it's a little nerve-wracking that this has taken so long? Like, is this
– I think it's much ado about nothing. There's 9 open OC jobs. These guys don't need to be recruiting. It's not college football. They're not installing a game plan this week.
I guess the point is –
I think it's a big deal.
I guess the point is Pat Shurmur interviewed like 3+ weeks ago. is that, are we, can we read into that, that none of them have impressed the Commanders and Ron just has to keep going down his phone and saying, all right, well, that interview sucked. This one was boring. Let's find somebody else. Or is it more so just being nice and slow in January and February, which would be a good approach?
My thought is if they wanted to talk to Lynn, they just got out of the playoffs, right? So that you were waiting on it. If you want to talk to Bieniemy, it seems like he doesn't want to do it until after the Super Bowl. So you're waiting on it. And dude, no one else is interviewing Zampezi or Shermer. Yeah. No one. Like, I'm not being hyperbolic. Check. Nobody else is interviewing those dudes. So I think he can wait. He has the authority to wait, right? Like, he's in charge of this. And he's got, I think he'd be very, very comfortable if he hires Pat Shermer. And he knows there's no competition. So I think it's fair
and
judicious here.
To be fair, they had no competition to trade for Carson Wentz, and they went ahead and did that anyway.
I'm not saying it's going to be the right result, but like,
I'm saying that this slow plotting process is the correct process. Take your time. All these guys that are still in the playoffs, all the positional coaches that, you know, might be getting ready to make a move up, wait for all of them. None of the guys you're interviewing are being snapped up by anybody else. Let's wait till after the Super Bowl. Talk to everyone. With the Chiefs, with the Eagles, with the Niners, with the Bengals, talk to all these dudes who are up and comers and see what comes up. There's no reason to rush it.
Anthony Lynn, as I try to learn how to speak, gets my stamp of approval along with Thomas Brown and Eric Bieniemy. The rest of them, maybe a half stamp for Studisville, and I could take and leave the rest of the candidates. But this was a good one, and Ron, leaving Pebble Beach, whether he heard the backlash or this was planned all along, regardless, it shows how serious he is. And that's good that those two are seeing each other face to face. And I think that does boost Lynn's stock a bit, that they can kind of be in the room, because being in a room with someone, you get a little more better feel for him.
I think most of the interviews have been in person, dude. Yeah. I know at least London's – I think we forgot to mention Studsville earlier. So there's London, Studsville, Shermer, Zampezi, Lynn. Brown,
Lynn.
And Lynn.
Yeah, so Lynn. But this was just Ron and Anthony one-on-one, right?
Right, which is a little more interesting.
Yeah, that could be an added layer.
Well, and one thing that's interesting, too, is a lot of these interviews have been guys flying into town, and I know at least two of them, they you know, had a hotel, like stayed the night. They all went out to dinner. So it's like a longer process. Now, maybe I don't think they've been on the same staff ever, but Lynn kind of comes from the Rex Ryan tree. And maybe, I don't know. I think Lynn overlapped with Del Rio. So I'm sure Resh Manuel will tweet us exactly how many connections there are and whose wife's college roommate married the linebacker coach or whatever. I conclude the Anthony Lynn segment by saying I believe Anthony Lynn could really happen. All right. Superlatives. Today is February 2nd, 2023. 1 year ago today was the infamous, whatever you want to call it, 2-2-22, where the Commanders revealed their new name on the Today Show. It was Jason Wright. It was Doug Williams. It was John Allen and Craig Melvin from FedEx Field. We were all out there. It was butt cold. It was freezing that day. Dan and Tanya, that may have been the last public comments we got from Dan. I know he spoke to like the Maryland Gaming Board when he was bragging about Carson and all the improvements to old FedEx Field. But I don't know. That wasn't public. That was like a private Zoom with like the commissioners or whatever. And he certainly took no questions. But, you know, the reveal was the reveal. But we got a bunch of superlatives for the first year of the Commanders, correct?
Yes. It is the official rebrandiversary podcast. JP came up with the idea to do some superlatives. So we'll start. Let's do the best on-field moment of the Commanders' inaugural season, and let's try to limit it to a moment as opposed to a game. I think moment makes it pretty fun. On-field.
Well, I'm cheating off the break. It was the Eagles game.
Okay.
Or if you want the moment, it was the locker room vibe after the Eagles game.
Yeah, locker room, not on field. So I'll take the game. I'll take the game. That's a good one. It's hard to distill that into one single play. That was just an
amazing. Maybe the one play was when they hit the bomb to, I think it was Watkins, and then they forced the fumble downfield and recovered it.
There you go. Yeah, because that just shows.
I was going to say it was the second quarter, 10-minute drive, eight and a half minute drive with Brian Robinson punching it in to that kind of was the one that you're like sitting there, you're like, oh, hell, we were in the press box. We're like, this thing might be real. They might be able to beat this team.
All right, I'll transition. I'll go to Terry McLaurin in Indianapolis because of that being Terry's hometown and it being just a really cool way to cap off the afternoon. I'm not reopening that argument. That was a weird argument about whether that game mattered or not. For that to be
I was proven correct. I was proven correct, and you all owe me an apology.
Can I please do my superlative? Taylor Heinicke drifting backfield for 8 seconds, chucking it up there. It was the genesis of the effort, Terry down there somewhere, setting up the 1 yard touchdown, the game winning play. Really, really awesome for Terry to just be able to do that in front of his fans. That was my favorite on field moment. All right. Best single storyline. I'll start Brian Robinson going from what was appeared to be a touch and go situation there in August for a little bit. Then, you know, tweeting from his hospital bed that he was okay and hearing that the players and coaches were going to see him, that he's getting better, to his return in week 5. But then the first couple games, he was a little bit, you know, not himself, understandably. But then him generating this identity for an offense that really needed one. He also just was a really humble, funny guy in the locker room who just was pretty quiet, but very confident in himself. And watching him just go from, oh, God, is he going to play this year, to, oh, God, how many yards is he going to pick up on this run and how many players are going to be on his back? I loved the whole Brian Robinson redemption arc, a classic story of adversity to success. It's what we all love in sports. That's my favorite storyline.
It's a runaway. There's nothing else here.
I mean, I think I was torn between Daron Payne and Jahan Dotson. I guess I'll go Jahan Dotson, who got crushed. The Commanders got crushed for the pick in the draft. He was overdrafted, and they made a mistake, all these different things. I mean, had he not gotten hurt, and you extrapolate his numbers over a full season, he arguably could have been your NFL Offensive Rookie of the Year. I mean, he led the team in touchdowns. He was a threat in the red zone the entire year. He started making bigger plays downfield. Later in the season, you start seeing him kind of figure out how to get open in the NFL and then not just get open, but make plays. And when he couldn't make plays, draw PIs. I thought the emergence of Jahan Dotson, especially with, you know, how questioned everybody was with the draft pick early on, that was a great storyline. I think it bodes well for the future going forward.
Two rookies. I like it.
I think it's Payne. I'd put Payne ahead of Dotson because I just you could extrapolate all you want, but like one question was size and getting hurt, and he got hurt, and it was a soft tissue. It could have happened to anybody, but you know, we got to see some durability there over the years here. Payne, incredibly durable, dude. I also think Payne's going to, I can't say what I think because people start putting it on Instagram. Like that's just my feeling, guys. I'm not reporting anything. I think he's going to go, which maybe makes it less of a cool storyline. We're doing all the best. Where are the worst?
No, we'll get into the worst right now. The worst on field moment on field. And then we'll get to the
going to Carson, trading for Carson, going to Carson week 17.
Yeah. That was so disheartening.
You threw a pick on the second play of the game.
Yeah. I mean,
they were in the playoff hunt. Like
that afternoon had a horrible vibe from the start. Carson throwing a pick, then throwing another one a couple drives later, and then throwing a third in the second half. A broken man playing quarterback for the Commanders in their most pivotal game of their first year. Mitch, do you have another one?
Yeah, I mean, I think earlier in the year there were so many good vibes after the Jacksonville game. Going up to Detroit, folks thought the Commanders might start 2-0, you know, be in a good spot going against Philly, and they go up and lay an absolute egg in the first half of that game. They're down 22-0 at halftime. There was the was it the Amon-Ra St. Brown? Was that his touchdown where he fell down and no one was close to him?
Oh, no, that's DeAndre Swift.
There's
so many broken coverages. I got confused which one you're referring to.
Yeah, I mean, Carson threw a pick. They couldn't get anything going on offense. I mean, that was a comeback to earth moment you thought this team could be flying high after scoring, you know, 30 plus or scoring however many they did in the opening game, and then to come out and lay an egg like that early against Detroit was such a low moment.
Yeah, I like that. That's one that won't get mentioned a lot, but you're right. It was like, oh, wow, they might have found the quarterback, this new identity, this new just way of playing football, and then they did a typical Commanders thing, which is lose in Detroit. For me, for a team that was so close to 500, there's a million of these, but I think the strip sack touchdown on Sunday night, Heinicke and Thibodeau, that led to a faltering performance on Sunday night, which could have been a real exclamation point. The stadium was actually packed for once. People were excited to be there. And they just couldn't take control of that moment. And that was the beginning of the end in terms of them trying to make the postseason and having everything in front of them. All right.
About up 10-0 in the Meadowlands.
Yeah.
Jones hits that bomb to Slayton down the left side. Probably the offensive pass interference. They didn't call it. I mean, you want worst on-field moments, the McLaurin illegal motion on Sunday Night Football, the Samuel no-call on Sunday Night Football. I mean, those two Giants games sunk the season. From up 10-0, they won one more game, and it was the last game of the year when they were already eliminated from the playoffs. That was week 13. So, I don't know. There's a lot of bad ones.
Worst.
If you want a fun one, though, the Curtis Samuel touchdown against the Vikings where the ref knocked down the Vikings DB – I thought that was a fun one.
Oh, the definition of fun. All right. Everyone's been anticipating this one. The worst off-field moment. JP, I know you had one that is now also a year old.
Well, are we doing specific to the rebrand or just like everything they do?
I think we could maybe look past everything they do, and that's not to look literally past it because there's some serious things, but maybe just the rebrand or them trying to move forward from the past.
The crest was an abomination. Like, you can't mess up the dates on your crest. And they fixed it, and that's cool. But that – how – the level of oversight committed to not notice that, just to not know that it's the 91 team. Like what are we doing here? The song kind of sucks, but maybe that'll change over time. And dude, some of that – I like
– are you just rolling through all them, JP?
Yeah, I got a bunch.
You just stole mine. I was doing fight song.
Because I want to own this a little bit. Like, I thought the right move was to keep everything as similar as possible to before. And now, 1 year later, I wonder if they shouldn't have just gone full reboot. Like, make it red, white, and blue like the rest of the city teams. Don't have a hail anything. Because I'm anti-hashtag in general. I've been very clear on that. I'm an anti-hashtag person. But I did say, like, yo, make the hashtag HTTC. Like, keep that continuity, I guess. And I think take command's pretty lame. But, like, in hindsight, maybe they should have just re-racked everything and started from scratch. Too late now. And I do like the unis a lot. Even the white one that I didn't like at first has really grown on me. I love both helmets. Mm-hmm. But the fight song, just, I don't know, maybe get rid of it. I don't know.
Mitch, while you're looking for a backup there, I'll go with the Sean Taylor Memorial. It fits in with the theme of trying to do right, doing wrong, and then having to correct yourself. And also, this was the second mess up of a Sean Taylor Memorial. You shouldn't even get one strike in this area, and they got two. And look, they fixed it up later by getting the jersey right and pointing out that his cleats were what he used to wear, all that good stuff. But it was still a wire mannequin in a box, and they pulled a red curtain off.
And they screwed it up the year before. They were trying to make up for how bad they screwed up the first thing, and they screwed it up.
For them to err and then have so much heat. You cannot screw it up again. We got it. We got it. We're setting the date. Everybody knows this is the Sean Taylor game. To, oh, it's just a mannequin made out of wire, and it's got mismatched gear on it. They really effed up twice. So I thought that really, really sucked.
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing.
But I want to give them credit. They did Sonny well. The of all the off-field things they messed up, Sonny, they did well.
Well, we talk about the fight song being a pretty big negative, or at least just a weird, you know, song that doesn't really fit, especially as like a fight song per se. But they did bring in the left hand up guys, and they like kind of embraced that, you know, this social movement that was going. So like, with all the bad, there were some goods. Pete, I always laugh at one of the things that always makes me laugh is the the Washington State mug.
Yeah.
You know, with the Commanders logo on the inside. I mean, I don't know in the grand scheme of things, if we're talking about the crest and Sean Taylor, if that really ranks. But to me, it's just, you know, one of those things that, you know, with a little bit of oversight gets handled pretty easily or pretty early on, and doesn't get to the point that it's being, you know, sold out of a team branded on site, you know, trailer or whatever it was. But that one just made me laugh.
Dude, that's a great one. And that's one of the, like, if that, I can't think of like a comparable thing because of Washington and Washington, but like if something similar happened to the Bills or the Panthers, you know what I mean? Like nobody would care. It'd be a funny little blip on the radar, but here it's like part right. of the laundry list of F's. Dude, the one thing that really pissed me off was the Brian Robinson press release. I thought that was,
that's a really, really good absolute
cringe moment. And that, I think we all know where that came from, and it wasn't from anybody that
day-to-day operations
we believe will be part of the organization a year from now. So,
I think that
I don't know, positive one. And I don't know if we're even doing superlatives, so I can stop.
I think we're wrapped up, so we can keep talking. Yeah.
I like Major Tutty. I'm in on Tutty. I think it's fun. They never had a mascot, so like I'm not judging it against anything previously. I think outside of having a cigar in his mouth, which I think would be really cool, and I know they're not going to do, but like outside of that, he checks every box I wanted. He's a fat hog cartoon character, and his shirt doesn't fit right. Like, I'm all in on Tutty. I'm a fan of Tutty.
Dude, you should get Major Tutty to do a birthday party for Shelby and Ainsley, or like a visit at the house.
If Major Tutty's available, perhaps I will. I have a.
You can give him a cigar.
I agree. I'm totally in on Tutty. I think he's great. And I think
Tutty folks deserves to go to the Pro Bowl more than Tyler Huntley.
Oh, yeah.
Folks that are upset about it or don't like it are just curmudgeons. Sorry, Pete, if that's you.
No, I like Major Tutty. I wrote that I liked him in my story. I wrote a story, three things that have gone well and three things that have been more of a struggle in the Commanders rebrand. And Major Tutty made my third gone well. And I've been told by people on Twitter I should be fired for kissing so much corporate butt.
Might be right. You just said
you can't. You can't win.
Things that have gone well and things that have been more of a struggle. Jeez, Pete, where's the Pete is pulling it all the way back here.
Yeah,
more of a struggle. All right,
real sharp pen over here.
Listen, editors' jobs are to dull our pens. All right, but considering this is an audio medium and we kind of just free flow, it's a.
How about the dog,
Mando?
Mando was great.
Mando was pretty great. I mean, across the board, everyone loved him. The players, the staff.
It's a puppy, Mitch. Are there people out there that don't like puppies?
It's the easiest win in the world, and it was a win.
Even watching,
check it off as in the win column.
Can't screw up a puppy.
All in all, how do you feel about the name 1 year later?
That's a great way to cap this. It's tough. I think time, as your interview with Joe Pompliano, who is a business expert, and we'll tack on at the end of this podcast, he brought this up. Time really helps in these things. And as you get more fans who enter in fan stage, who only know this team as the Commanders and not what they used to be, that'll help make it more widely accepted if it remains Commanders in the future. I thought I would be more warmed up to it or more used to it. It is still so freaking strange that we cover the Washington Commanders. And I don't know if I'll ever fully embrace it. And I think there's probably thousands, if not millions, who agree and who would be even more harsh in their analysis. But it is also wild. It's been a year already.
Yeah, I'm starting to get settled in with it. I think it's still clunky, which I think was part of the issue when they came out with it, as, you know, JP and Joe Pompliano talked about, and we've talked about the lack of a nickname for it makes it super tough. And I think that's what makes it clunky. But as far as, like, when I hear the old name, it makes my ears perk up more than when I hear Commanders now. You know, I hear Commanders and I'm used to it now, and it's become part of our vernacular and vocabulary, and it's not so weird. It's more when, you know, the few times that when JP slips up and says the old name or we talk about the old teams, I'm getting used to it. I think folks are going to get, you know, folks like to complain about stuff. They're going to complain about it. I think as time goes by, everyone will get used to it. It just doesn't change the fact that it's still clunky, which is, is what it is, and we're going to have to deal with it.
Yeah, it's a mouthful for sure. I interact with a ton of people, and 8 times out of 10, they come up and ask me about the Washington football organization. And I would say most of those interactions for a long time were, they would say the old name, or they'd make a joke about how they liked the football team. And for a lot of the last year, for the first half, since like the unveiling till they started playing, it was like a lot of complaints. Some people saying they liked it, whatever. Now more and more when people come up to me, they're just like, hey, what do you think Commanders are going to do at OC? Or like, hey, is Howell really the Commanders quarterback? And it's kind of, I think, gained like an acceptance, which I think is a really good step. And I think for me, yeah, it's kind of gained an acceptance. I'm cool with the name. I really like the uniforms. I think that's helped a lot.
The slimming red pants are great.
And I think like anything, man, one, it takes time. And two, it is like, they're going to tweak it and I hopefully improve it over time too. So I don't know. 1 year later, I feel way better about the whole thing than I did a year ago.
Yeah. And if Sam Howell is the second coming of, you know what, then who cares what they're called? That's what we'll focus on instead, which is the secret to all of this.
Go 12-5. We ain't going to be talking about any of this.
Yeah.
Eagles kind of tweaked their logo this year. You think anybody in Philly cares?
Nope. N-O-P-E.
All right. Interview with Joe Pompliano next, author of the Huddle Up newsletter. Thanks for listening. You made it this far. I owe you a beer.
Oarsman opened its first car dealership in 1921. Now, over 100 years and many dealerships later, Oarsman of Virginia can proudly say that when it comes to your car buying needs, if you want it, we've got it. Saving, selection, and service? Check. Lifetime engine guarantees and car washes? Check. Loaner cars and free Virginia inspections? Check and check. See, over the past 100 years, we've learned that to succeed in business, we've got to keep our customers happy. And that's the Oarsman story.
Oarsman Ford Lincoln. Let's ride together.
Really excited to talk to Joe Pompliano, author of the Huddle Up newsletter, a sports business expert, one of the best Twitter follows out there. You can follow him at Joe Pompliano. Joe, I reached out because today marks the 1 year anniversary of the Commanders rebrand, of changing from the old name to no name to the new name. And given your expertise in kind of the sports business space, let's start broadly. How do you think it has gone for them 1 year in?
I think it's gone pretty well. It's always tough with a rebrand, right? Most people do it for a variety of reasons, but with Washington specifically, I think part of it was to obviously get rid of the old name that people had some problems with. But I think in some instance too, it was to throw away some of the scandal and the controversies over the last few years. And I think in the perfect world, if the organization was going to change ownership, you would have timed those up together, right? You would have said, hey, we're going to sell the team and done the rebranding at the same time, so fans get a fresh start, new fans come in, etc. That obviously didn't work out, and they're kind of staggered to some degree. But I think it's been good. The NFL is obviously super helpful when it comes to making sure everyone's aware of the name and calling it the right thing and all of that. So I don't think there's been any huge problems. The interesting part about rebrands to me is that there's almost always a negative thought from fans or people involved with the business or the company initially when the rebrand comes out. Most people just don't like them. They don't like change, etc. But those numbers tend to change and trend upwards over time, right? So people get used to it. They're more comfortable with it, etc. I think right now it's probably just too early to tell. There's probably a lot of Washington fans that would still tell you they don't like it. But if you waited 3, 4, 5 years down the line, I think they would be much more comfortable with it.
This is perhaps silly, but I think a lot of the best sports teams have nicknames, even beyond the official name. But then there's like the Patriots, people call them the Pats. I mean, there's so many of those. Even in D.C., the rest of our teams here, the Wizards, people call the Wiz, the Caps, people, the Capitals or the Caps, et cetera. How much do you think the lack of a natural nickname with Commanders is an issue?
Yeah, it's difficult to tell. Personally, I think it's a little rigid, right? It's just kind of like there and to your point, there's no nickname. So it's difficult when you're in conversation, and some people probably refer to them as Washington still, right? And that certainly plays into it. I'm sure that was part of the process when they went through rebranding of names, trying to figure out kind of what people could call it, how they would refer to the team, et cetera. But it's tough to tell kind of how much of a difference it makes, because there's really no data to back that stuff up.
And then I don't know how much data you might have on this stuff, but I think the uniform rollout largely went pretty well. I really liked that they introduced the blacks. The burgundy look, I think, is clean. I didn't like the white uniform much at first, but it's grown on me a lot. How have they done kind of in the business side of selling gear and uniform acceptance, all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I'm not particularly sure from like a absolute number perspective, but I think when you see rebrands in general, the numbers are usually pretty good, because that's the new jersey, right? People want new things when they go to the game. They don't want to wear jerseys that are a decade old or 15 years old. So I'm sure that the numbers were pretty substantial. I don't think that the market or the fan base is necessarily large enough to have them lead the league, right? Like from a player standpoint, a lot of this is driven by individual players. Josh Allen selling a lot of jerseys, Tom Brady was selling a lot of jerseys and more. So a lot of that comes down to the individuals that are on the team. But anytime you have change and there's a rebrand, you have an inherent advantage that you're going to sell more merchandise, because people are going to want to buy those new items.
And so the rebrand is here. It's done. A lot of people wonder if, when this team gets sold, could the new owner change the name again? Do you think that's possible, or would that be?
That's what I was going to ask you, right? Is I think that's the unknown, is that you could, right? To my point earlier, that a lot of what you do the rebrand for is to get rid of the controversy and scandal. I don't think Dan Snyder would necessarily say that's why he did it. But ultimately, I think that's what a lot of fans would infer from that decision. And ultimately, that's what a lot of companies do. So if a new owner comes in and wants to wipe away everything, say we're going to get a clean slate, a fresh start, that would make sense. My concern there would be, now you're doing a third rebrand in just a few years, right? You go from the Redskins to the Washington Football Team to the Commanders to something else. So I don't think it happens. So for the fact that, one, that's a lot of change. And two, if the team is sold within the next 12 months or so, it's only been the Commanders for a short period of time, right? I don't think people associate the Commanders necessarily with everything that's happened in the past with the Redskins and the Washington Football Team. So my guess is that it doesn't happen. But again, you never know. People have done it for less. And I think the other concern here is, some people talk about money. You know, it costs quite a lot of money actually to do a rebrand, millions of dollars typically. But if you're buying a team for $7 billion or more, you're probably not very concerned about it. So I wouldn't count that as a concern. It's more about just keeping mind share in fans' eyes and not giving too much change at once.
And last thing, because FedEx Field, the home stadium for the Commanders, is old and usually rated among the lowest in the NFL. How long, in your experience, and I know you're covering sports business all over the globe, but a new stadium project, how long does that take?
Oh, it takes quite a while. Yeah. I mean, especially if you're trying to get in bed with the government to do it, right? Local governments to be able to either pay for part of the stadium or use the land or things like that. Again, it's a difficult question to answer, because every situation is different. Sometimes they're buying the land. Sometimes they already own it. Sometimes it's privately funded. Sometimes it's publicly funded. But I think you probably have to give it at least a few years on the minimum side, just strictly for construction of the stadium. And then I've seen some of these projects take a decade or more based on working with governments that are typically slower to act in some of these situations and so forth. So I think on the optimistic side, you're still looking at a couple of years, but on the slower side, you're probably looking at a decade plus.
And the Commanders don't even have a site. There's no shovels in the ground. They don't even have a place to put a shovel. Joe.
Yeah. I think part of it too depends on the quality of the stadium now, right? Like FedEx gets a lot of heat on social media, we'll call it, from people, you know, posting videos of fans falling or water leaking and things like that. So those are types of things that if a new ownership group comes in, maybe that's something they focus on, right? They say, look, this is something that obviously needs to change. We need to expedite this process. And there's various ways that you can speed it up depending on your financing and how you're willing to pay for things. But ultimately, look, you still have to build the stadium, right? So that's going to take at least a year or two at a minimum.
Well, and it's interesting too, because there are some stadiums that will be old and run down, but people embrace it. They're like, oh, it's a dump, but it's our dump kind of thing. And I think what fosters that is winning. And this team just hasn't won at FedEx.
I went to an AC Milan match last year in Italy, and San Siro is the stadium they play in. I couldn't believe the stadium was still up. I literally, the stairs were like falling apart. The bathrooms were nasty, like all this stuff. And the fans love it, right? To your point, the team has this like rich history and culture where the fans really enjoy it. And it's seen as like this historical site. And me, you know, like we come from over here. I had no idea. I haven't been a fan of the team, et cetera. And I'm like, I couldn't believe this. But I think it just depends on if the team is good, if they have a rich culture, if people enjoy the stadium and visiting it, regardless of kind of the quality of it.
Joe, thank you so much for your time. This has really been helpful and interesting. I appreciate it.
Of course. Happy to do it.
You know, the reveal was the reveal.
What Makes You Smile is brought to you by Dominion National. For anyone that needs dental and vision benefits, I have a one-stop shop for you. TeethKeeperSave.com. TeethKeeperSave.com offers dental and vision benefits for everyone with plans starting under $7 a month. Don't have benefits through your employer? Are you self-employed and need dental and vision benefits? TeethKeeperSave.com has various plans for individuals to choose from. Visit TeethKeeperSave.com today and enroll in minutes.